This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to the March 16th, 2020 For Your Benefit radio show. We're here today about talking about Social Security. Probably a good time to be talking about it, regardless of the date, but in particular what's going on in our country. And who better to lead us than John Elliott? John is a retired federal employee. He's a you no longer speak for NITP, but you answer all the tough questions, right, John? John says yes.
I answer email, so in that sense, I speak for NITP, But I mean, you're the boss, so maybe.
Well, some days I am. Anyway, we also welcome Lester Austin. Lester is a retired senior public affairs specialist with Social Security, and Lester is very shy. But good morning, Lester.
Good morning. It's a great opportunity, great pleasure to be here. Talk about this issue of Social Security as far as where it's been, where it's at, and where it's going.
Okay, so why don't we start off just direct. How are Social Security benefits calculated? Probably could be answered in four shows, but I mean, there must be some formula or some rules.
What they do is they look at the 35 years of high earnings of an individual, and they index, do what is called an index. So when you were in high school and college and your earnings were low, they index that earning to bring those earnings up to current day value. And then with the formula they use, they come up with what is called a primary insurance amount. And that's what a person is paid at their full retirement age.
So I guess if I looked at it this way, way back when we were working for, I hate to say when I was working for 50 cents an hour or $1 an hour or $2 an hour. So this brings up those wages way back when to today's wage such that when you calculate the benefit, you're not harmed by the fact that many years ago you didn't make that much.
That's correct, because for those individuals that had low earning over their working lifetime, Social Security is about a 42% replacement rate of their pre-retirement earnings.
42% then of, let's not talk about the high three, but it's 42% of a larger number.
Right. So we're looking at the total earnings throughout one's working lifetime.
So, you know, our listeners generally, not always, but the CSRSers may not have the Social Security credits that the FERS people do, except for John Elliott. And John is saying, well, what about me, Bob? You've known me a long time. Yes, I have.
Well, Kirk, I had really low earnings prior to the government. I mean, I think my highest year was about $8,500 a year, but that was back in the late 60s.
It was a while ago.
And that actually wasn't a bad salary for a young man back in the late 60s. And then I had some summer jobs with very obviously very little money. But, and I had, I think when I joined the federal government under CSRS, where you didn't pay into Social Security, I had 25 credits before I joined the government. Then I worked for 30 years with zero Social Security taxes being paid. And then I went to work doing retirement seminars, and including NITP for most of that time. And I got my 40th credit, so I'm getting a Social Security benefit, albeit reduced by the windfall elimination provision, which we're going to get into later in the show, according to the agenda.
Yeah, it's like a lot of times I hear folks that say, I paid all this money into Social Security. I paid all, and I have to say, hold up. Like this year, the maximum contribution on 6.20% is $137,700. Well, when you look at this, that's how much a person earned. But in Social Security at 6.20%, this year they're paying a maximum $8,537.40. So when a person receives their Social Security in the first couple of years, they're usually going to get back everything they put into it.
Yeah. It's a good deal. And what I've known people who only get paid in cash, and they're supposed to, if they're self-employed, as you know, pay into Social Security. But I'm afraid, I'm always afraid they don't, because that's why they insist on being paid in cash, and they don't realize what a great deal it is.
Right, because when a person is self-employed, they have the responsibility of paying their taxes. That's going to be done on the 1040, line 12. They're going to have to show the business. And with the business, they're going to file a Schedule C, and with those business expenses taken from the gross amount of their earnings, if they have a net of $400 or greater, they're going to file a Schedule SC. A self-employed individual, they're going to pay 15.3% into Social Security and Medicare combined.
Now, Bob can tell us they get some of that back off their taxes, right?
Okay, now, everybody stay awake for this. So on the tax side, if an individual receives Social Security, they don't have to report the full amount. Not that they don't have to. The law says they don't have to. So if it's, let's say, half of the dollar amount, but they still get Social Security credits, they may not pay the income taxes on it. So this is a good thing that they would still get the credits for the
years
that
they were. These are the self-employed people.
Right, even the self-employed.
Well, like I was.
What happens then with that self-employed individual?
Mm-hmm.
When they get older or they have succumbed to their occupational hazard and they have not contributed to Social Security as they may have wished they had, their benefits will be low.
Well, that's where I was going to go next. The people that don't report income, and you know, I'm a bean counter, I'm a CPA. I don't think I've ever met anybody like that, but I've heard about them. Anyway, I've met them as well. And when you tell a self-employed person that they not only owe income tax, but they owe the Social Security tax, which would be both halves relative to an employee, sometimes they feel that they don't want to report all the income. Then, of course, they can't become a client. So, you know, one of our jobs is to make sure that they do report it. Now,
right,
which claim is deductions and whatnot, it's another story. But, you know, you never want to not report income.
Whereas a person that is an employee working for an employer, they are paying 7.65%. And that 7.65% breaks down to 1.45% is going to Medicare and 6.20% is going towards Social Security. And this year, again, that maximum is $137,700.
Okay, let me ask you guys, because you're the benefits whiz, the CSRS folks, you know, they have this, but the FERS people, they have full Social Security withholdings, correct?
That's correct.
Yes.
So those people that are hired January 1, 1984 and later, they're under the Federal Employees Retirement System. So they're paying into Social Security, Civil Service, and the Thrift Savings Plan.
And they,
so it's a three-tier package.
And so if we've got all those, we have some money left to eat and maybe go, maybe take a trip after the end of April.
Well, if they're since the inception of the Thrift Savings Plan in 1987, there have been many millionaires, multimillionaires,
With the thrift
mm-hmm. alone. And then they've got the FERS pension and Social Security. So
correct,
those people are in pretty good shape.
When initially they didn't think they would be.
No, they didn't. But I ran some numbers when I was at the Office of Personnel Management. And I figured if I had started under FERS, if there had been only FERS when I started, there wasn't until 15 years, half the way through my career, before FERS was offered, I figured I would have actually ended up with more money if I'd invested to the max I could every year in the TSP for 30 years. I figured I'd have more money than if I was under CSRS. But while I could have transferred to FERS, I stayed in CSRS because I lost those first 15 years of investing, so it wouldn't have, then that wouldn't have been a good idea to transfer.
And see, with a lot of young folks that are out in the workforce right now, they're not understanding the full effects of the FERS retirement as far as the Thrift Savings Plan, which part of it is being matched. And even though they can apply some additional funds in that each year to bring their retirement up more at a later date.
Well, they're just, the TSP just changed it recently. I just read it the other day. They're going to automatically enroll you so you contribute 5% of your salary. It used to be 3%, but now it's automatic enrollment, 5% of your salary, which means you get the full matching funds from your agency, which I think is a good idea.
But in addition to that 5%, you can contribute as much more.
Oh, yes, you can. Yeah. And you should contribute as much as you
correct.
Can.
Correct. But a lot of folks aren't doing that.
Oh, I yeah.
And
I don't
would
know
definitely
the
encourage
figures,
them
but,
to do
yeah.
it.
Okay. We have right. a listener, a fan of the show, and just sent in an email and mentions that New York City Health Department, they're telling people they should stay home. But from the Social Security viewpoint, said the field office in White Plains, which is a suburb of New York City, and the hearing office in Bedford Heights are closed. So I would imagine that, please don't quote me, folks, but I would imagine if it's done like that. Now, this area is not in the heart of New York City. It's on the outside of New York City. And I would say the big cities, that may in fact be the case, but then how do you separate the big cities from the smaller cities?
Well, White Plains is in Westchester County, which right. has been really hard hit with the coronavirus.
Yeah. Right.
And that explains why I'm sure they closed down.
Right here in the DMV area, Social Security offices are going to operate under normal procedures as of us speaking right now. I can imagine, based on the situation that's occurring, that this may change at any moment. At any moment.
So let's.
But one of the easiest ways to file for Social Security benefits for someone that wants to file is to go at Social Security's website.
And Lester, you have a great kind of intro to that. What do? You click on it.
Stick on it. And stroll through it.
Yeah,
a lot of information.
When I applied for my Social Security benefit a few years ago, I did it online, and I'm here to tell you that it was so easy. I mean, I don't know that it took me 20 minutes.
Yeah,
it was the prompts, the questions you had to answer were
so the
very clear.
Takeaway piece here is if this continues and. It just may that the offices are limited hours, if not shut down. I didn't say that's happening countrywide, but it may in a while. But you could still access Social Security. And can't you do that 24/7?
Online, they can file. They have the right. They can do that. Click on it, stick on it, stroll through it at www.socialsecurity.gov. File for retirement benefits. That application online takes anywhere from 15 to 20 minutes at max.
I did it. And it was much better than going to the local office. No disrespect to the local office, because I think a lot of the folks in there might have a hard time doing it online, and they'd like to talk to somebody to help make it make sense. Not that you can't.
And if someone feels that they must speak to someone, they're welcome to call 1-800-772-1213. 1-800-772-1213, and they can file for an appointment where someone will call them.
Okay, I think we need to take a break here and let people absorb what we just talked about, but also they should listen to the spot we're going to do. It's our sponsor, WEPA.
You have life insurance to protect the people you love. As a civilian federal employee, you have two choices designed specifically for you, WEPA and Fegley. The big difference? Price. Chances are WEPA premiums will cost you less. In fact, the average WEPA member saves $375 per year on premiums. Prioritize your peace of mind with a life insurance policy designed for feds by feds. If you're a civilian federal employee interested in comparing WEPA to Fegley, visit waepa.org today. WEPA is a proud sponsor of 4-Year Benefit, presented by NITP, Mondays 10:05 to 11 a.m. on Federal News Network, 1500 AM. WEPA has been insuring the future of federal workers for more than 75 years. See why over 46,000 feds have already switched to WEPA at waepa.org.
Welcome back to 4-Year Benefit. We're here today to talk about Social Security. Our experts Lester Austin, retired senior public affairs specialist with Social Security. John Elliott, retired Fed, works with NITP, answering all the tough email questions, and used to teach the courses. So we talked about Social Security and whatnot, but both of you got boots on the ground with this. What do you find, if there's a general comment to be made or general comments to be made about people that want to apply but didn't know what they're entitled to? Or if they knew, they wouldn't apply now, they might wait a year. So what's some common misconceptions or people that you've met that you thought would know this but didn't? Not the way out stuff, just the normal.
Well, one main question is, when is it best for me to retire? When is it best for me to retire? That's a personal decision. What I would say to someone is that they must make sure that their financial house is in order, because Social Security is only one leg of a three-legged stool. So your savings, your investment, your retirement from your job, and Social Security. Again, as I indicated earlier, Social Security is approximately a 42% replacement rate of one's pre-retirement earnings.
Let me ask you a question. Let's say that the individual qualifies for the full amount but is still working. If they take the benefit now, they would get the cash flow now. But if they waited till later, it would be greater based on inflation. So have you ever met anybody that made that calculation? I don't know that there would be many people that say, okay, I qualify for the full amount, but I'm still working. I'm not going to collect it until later. I had the same discussion with one of the benefits folks, and we were the polar opposite of this person felt, get it now. As soon as I'm entitled, I'm going to take it now, and I'm going to live till forever, so I'm going to wait till 70 and a half.
Well, I think I can mention his name. He won't be mad. Mike Causey, whom I'm sure the listeners all know, read his column, listen to his radio show on Wednesday. He took his full benefit at age whatever it was for him. It was before 66. But anyway, he took his full benefit, but he said since then he wished he'd waited till 70 because he was still working. He's still working, as you know, to this day. And he pointed out that if he'd waited till 70, he'd only have to live, if he'd taken it, waited till 70, he would have only had to live until a little over 80 years of age, approximately 82. He said 81 and a half, but about 82. And he's right, and he just turned... Now, you might get mad at this. He just turned 80 last month.
Doesn't look it.
No, he doesn't.
Doesn't sound it.
Doesn't sound it, doesn't look it. But that's for sure. But he's almost at the break-even point had he taken it at 70. And, of course, he'd get at least 32% more by waiting till 70 than he'd collected at his full retirement age. But I think he was born in 1940.
Right.
So I don't know what the full retirement
age is. So
many Americans cannot afford that kind of an opportunity.
Right.
Life expectancy in 1935, when Social Security first began, was 60 to 65. Life expectancy now, 80 to 85. So yes, people are living longer. But a person can first become eligible for retirement at age 62. If they're not working, if they are not receiving any self-employment, if they're not self-employed nor they're working, and they decide to get Social Security, why not? Why not? Because they're eligible. Some people say, well, I'd rather wait till full retirement age. Those individuals born between 1943 and 1954, 66 is full retirement age. Now, what happens, what we used to say, if a person elects to take that benefit at age 62, in the first 2 to 3 years that they're getting it, they're going to get back everything they'll put into Social Security. If they wait until 62 and file, it will take them anywhere from 13 to 15 years before they hit what is called the break-even point. And then the question comes, is full retirement age guaranteed? So what that means is Social Security is risky business. People have to make a decision, and that decision that they make will be effective for the rest of their life. Everybody's not going to live to be 80. Everybody's not going to live to be 75. You have to look at your own particular situation, make sure that your financial house is in order.
Absolutely.
Because some folks will say, well, I'd rather take it when I'm first eligible and take that money and put it up. And some people are doing
that. Just open your paper, if you still get a paper, to the obituary page, and you'll see there are plenty of people who don't make it to 80.
Let's look at it. This is an accountant question, so I'm glad you asked me. All righty. If somebody was to take the Social Security as early or earlier than what would be the full benefit age, in theory, if they took that money, they would have to pay taxes on it at the federal level, not 100% of it. And generally, many states don't tax Social Security. But whatever is left, they put it away. And they don't touch it until 70 and a half. They may, in fact, have a greater pot, or they got some pot. If something happens and they pass, there's this money that would have been received later, but because they put it aside. So now that's a mathematical calculation that's not impossible to do, but it's certainly something that should be considered.
I've had folks that come in, and at one time, a person could receive the benefit as early as 62. And this gentleman came in and did that. But then at his 65, that used to be full retirement age, he decided to pay all the money back because his mother had lived to 105. His father had lived to 103. He knew that longevity was on his side. So he paid that check back to Social Security, all the benefits he had received from 62 to 65. So that he could get the higher benefits and then get some delayed retirement credits.
But now, and the law changed.
The law has changed. So this gentleman paid that money back. What did Social Security do? We took the money. 6 months later, his son came in and said that dad had died, and can he get the money back? And the answer is what?
No. I guess it's no.
No.
Yeah.
It's risky business.
You put your money down and takes your chance. Yes. But speaking of that, he did it before the law changed.
Before the law changed.
Now you can only buy back a year, am I correct?
You used to. Could buy back a year, but now the benefits are affected with the month of filing.
So you can't even buy back anything.
That's correct.
Oh, okay.
So in your travels, I remember over the years that we've been doing the show, I think was it one person saved all their Social Security checks rather than cash them? And there was like many years, or was it the annuity check? I doubt it was the annuity check. I thought it was a Social Security check. And you were good enough to take it on and try to get that person their full dollar amount, even though those checks were way.
I've ran across some folks that have died. And they have held on those checks so long. So the survivors being the spouse or the child could be eligible for those checks because the person has lived throughout the month and they were entitled to those checks. So that family member was entitled to an underpayment.
Okay, well, it was nice of you to do that as well, but it's, I would say, even nicer that the government recognizes that issue and was.
Well, now the checks, because of situations like that, and then let me be a little blunt. We've had people that have died and the checks were not stopped in a timely manner. And this person was overpaid, unknowing that they were deceased by SSA. So when we went back to recoup that money, there was an overpayment on the record. So once those checks were received and returned to SSA, then that was moved off the record, and the record was a clean slate.
So does an individual like that, and I bet that happens a lot, where they delay or don't report a death at all, they have to pay 100% back?
Well,
or can you
a lot of times Social Security checks are not prorated.
Yeah.
The checks are run a month in the rear.
Yeah.
So the check you get for June represents payment for May.
Right.
So for a person to be entitled to that check, they have to live throughout the month. So if that person did not live throughout the month, the check comes back to Social Security. So back in the day, people received a hard copy check. So instead of the family member turning it back in or reporting the death, some of them kept getting the money. And that caused an issue.
But they had to pay it all back.
Yes, we pursued them.
Right.
Right.
Okay. So here's a three-pronged question, Lester, and John as well. If you look back at the advice you were giving somebody or a question that you got, let's take it from three different viewpoints. What was maybe the easiest one? What was middleweight, and what made you stop and think, I'm going to have to look this up? So let's start with the easy one. You know, you get a question based on your expertise. What do you find that people maybe generally don't understand or don't know the parameters of it?
The benefits payable by Social Security.
Yeah.
Social Security is not only a retirement benefit. Social Security is a package plan that doesn't stop working. Social Security pays children's benefits, children 18 years of age and younger, or 19 and full-time student in high school, mothers and fathers benefits for a mother or father that has a minor child, 16 or under, in their care. That mother or father could also be entitled on the record if they have low earnings or no earnings. Disability benefits, survivors benefits, widows and widowers benefits, mothers, grandparents, the grandchildren's benefits, different, a host of benefits Social Security can pay.
I didn't even know that. Boy.
Mothers and fathers benefits. For an example, Bob, John, say that you're taking care of your parent. You're claiming your parent as a dependent. You're providing over 50% support to your parent. You die, regrettably. That parent could be entitled to benefits on your record.
Really? Okay, this is good. Now, how about the middleweight question? I mean, I've got boots on the ground, so to speak. I listen to shows like this. I read whatever I can in the paper. There's always something in the paper about Social Security and whatnot. So now, again, that person reading or talking with friends to say, Lester, John, give me a middleweight question that you get that you thought maybe they should have known this, but maybe they didn't.
Social Security's going broke. Social Security is not going broke. Social Security right now has a surplus of about $2.9 trillion. Social Security is taking in more money than it's paying out right now. In 2029, Social Security will begin taking in less, paying out more. At that time, that $2.9 trillion in surplus will begin to be used. At that time, that surplus will continue to pay 100% benefits until 2035. In 2035 and later, if no changes have been made, Social Security will still be able to pay 79% on a dollar.
Yeah, I
what
read
year was
that just the other day. And
2035?
Excuse me,
one
John.
Proposal to fix that I read was if they raise, I guess now, from the cutoff limit from 137 to 250,000 a year, that could substantially improve the situation. And then they didn't say, but I was wondering, well, why not just raise it as high as you can to fix it?
Medicare, that 1.45%,
mm-hmm.
used to have a cap at 130,000. Congress raised the cap to 135,000. Congress has since removed the cap.
Right.
So as long as you work, you will continue to pay 1.45%.
And what is the idea behind, why can't they do that with Social Security?
530.
Why won't they? They could do it, but why won't they?
535 members on Capitol Hill. Please don't kill the message.
And they're rich friends and contributors. There you go.
Moving forward. All righty. So was that the toughest one?
One of them.
Okay. What's another one that that was very good, because I think that's all-encompassing for people that would listen. If it doesn't impact them directly, it might be indirectly. What have you found that the common misconception with regards entitlement to Social Security? Somebody, you know, they have to have it withheld from their pay, but, you know, we have one group of federal employees that don't have it withheld. But, I mean, I'm sure there are others out there. What was the culture shock that you got when somebody said, well, why don't I get it?
Well, when you go back in time, you look at farmers didn't pay into Social Security. A lot of other groups did not pay into Social Security. Railroad workers did not pay into Social Security because railroad have its own retirement.
Yes.
Post office, they have their postal employees, they have their own retirement because they were prior to the Social Security Act. OPM, prior to Social Security Act. So they had their own retirement. So what happened is these individuals may have had a part-time job or a full-time job before getting into those occupations, those employment situations where Social Security was not deducted. But yet they have earned enough Social Security quarters, credits, or periods, which are one and the same, to be eligible for a benefit.
So if our listeners are saying to themselves, gee, I wonder what my record has been. Now, as a federal employee under FERS, then I don't think you have to be too concerned about it not being withheld. But what about the job that I had way back when? Can you go and get a printout of what you've put into the system since day one?
That would be a costly effort. But yes, you can.
Okay. I thought you could.
Yeah, you can, but...
but you can go online and do it, right?
John is referring to, he wants a printout to see each employer over the years. You can do that. But also you can go online and get what is called your Social Security statement.
Okay.
So you can create what is called my Social Security account. So when once you have done that, then you can get a breakout of each year your contributions to Social Security from when you first start paying into it.
Now, folks, if you're listening to this, I'm not making this up. It happened to me. I go, I wonder when I started doing this. And it went way back when. I said, did I work then? It was probably a part-time job in the summer or a part-time job going to school. And there was some, quote, credit for that. So I was very surprised that as small as it was relative to what the dollar is worth now, but if I didn't know to do that, which I didn't know, I probably was listening to you talk to one of the classes or John.
So that's when you look back and say, oh, I earned this amount in high school. Might have been $400 or $500. And remember what I talked about indexing? We took that $400 or $500, indexed it to the current day value to pay one more back of what they put into it. So then, through the years, you have contributed more. So even though that might be a year that's going to be used in the computation, in computing your benefit, getting a little tongue twisted, in computing your benefit, we're still using the total amount of earnings.
Okay, let's give that tongue a little rest here, and we'll listen to a spot by what NITP can do for the listeners.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're rehearsing here for the final leg of the show. So a lot of good information, but let's move the needle up a little bit. John, what was that your recollection? What was one of the tougher questions you felt somebody should know that you got either in class or answering the emails?
Well, certainly answering the emails. I think the most one single question I get more often, and it is a complex question, is should I, when I become eligible for Medicare at 65, should I, or when you stop working if later, should I take Part B? That's the non-hospitalization portion of Medicare, paying for doctor's fees and outpatient costs. That, and that's the reason that question is difficult is that there's no one-fits-all answer. So you have to look at your own health. How often do you visit the doctor? Because you're going to pay for Part B out of your pocket. The hospitalization Part A is you've already paid for your payroll taxes, so you get that free. But so taking to be or not to be is probably, the off the top of my head, the most difficult question to answer because it can be different for everyone.
And everyone doesn't even know it, right?
Right, yeah. And everybody doesn't know it, and there are things they don't know about Medicare. For example, when I in my response, which is quite lengthy, that's usually the longest email response that I do is for that question. And one thing I have to tell them is if you don't take Part B, you elect, and that's your choice. By law, your FEHB plan, your federal health benefits plan, can only pay the amount that Medicare that would pay had you taken Medicare Part B. So many federal employees take Part B, but many don't as well. And so there's no, as I said earlier, there's no one-size-fits-all answer.
I'd imagine that's a tough answer to answer oneself without ability to ask somebody. I can't imagine doing that.
Yeah, I mean, when my wife became 65, I hope she's not listening, but we were wrestling with whether she should take Part B or not because she, like me, has got FEHB.
Yeah, there are a lot of baby boomers out there right now that are coming of age for the Medicare. Even though full retirement age has gone up, like I indicated earlier, those individuals born between 1943 and 1954, age 66 is full retirement age. But Medicare is still 65. You have 3 months before your 65th birthday, the month of, and 3 months after to file for Medicare Part A and B in most situations. Part A, that's the hospital insurance. That covers inpatient costs in the hospital, inpatient costs in the skilled nursing facility, home health care, and hospice care for the terminally ill. Like you said, the premium for that, for someone that didn't work long enough, is $458 a month. But if a person has earned enough quarters of coverage, then it's free. Part B, that has a monthly premium of $144.60 a month, effective this year, depending on if you, how much your earnings are. If they're under $87,000 or less, it's $144.60. If it's more, say somebody got over $500,000 of earnings, their monthly premium is going to be $491 a month and 60 cents. So it depends. Part B, that covers outpatient services at the hospital, certain services in the doctor's office. Military folks, they're mandated, they have CHAMPIS, they're mandated to buy into Part B. While one is working, Medicare is the secondary, the employer plan is primary. Once they stop working, Medicare becomes the primary, employer plans become secondary.
Yeah, and for our federal audience, if you have your FEHBP plan, we would assume that virtually everybody does, and you take Part B, usually means you will have no out-of-pocket expenses except for prescription drugs. And then you've got your federal plan probably picks up a big chunk of your drug costs too. So, yeah, I mean, it's if particularly I had a good friend who had a lot of health issues, and he had took Part B, and he took about 11 different prescriptions a day. And he was a perfect candidate for taking Part B,
right,
because he had no out-of-pocket expenses.
Right. So, like you said, John, a person has to look at their own particular situation. A lot of times that question comes up. I'm in the military. I got military hospitals around. Do I need Part B? CHAMPIS says yes. They have to have Part B.
Right. The military have to take it at 65.
And a lot of folks don't.
But the feds don't. It's an option.
Right. Yeah, so what happens is when they refuse to take military personnel, when they refuse to take the Part B, their CHAMPIS will stop. Excuse me. Yeah.
TRICARE.
I'm telling my age.
It used to be CHAMPIS.
I'm telling my age.
Yeah.
But it used to be CHAMPIS. But they switched over to TRICARE.
Right.
And when they switched over to TRICARE, one of the biggest problems was they forgot the senior vets. So then they came back with TRICARE for life. So it was a lot of different things, a lot of moving pieces.
You certainly are moving the pieces around. So I think we got to the high point, the toughest question, right? And if we're talking to somebody beginning career, I've been going two opposite ends of the spectrum, but I believe all the above listen to the show. So are there any options that they need to elect early on? Again, we just joined the federal sector, or we've been in there 5 years or 8 years, et cetera. What do we need to do to address now so that it's not prohibitively expensive later on?
A lot of times young folks that enter into the federal government, they're under FERS now. Like I said, anybody hired January 1, 1984 and later, they're under the three-tier package, where they're paying in the civil service, Social Security, their savings plan. Young folks, they work every day. But the question is, how about if I become disabled? What happens? They're going to be mandated to file for Social Security disability benefits first. And if approved, they can file under civil service.
Is that what they call SSDI?
Social Security Disability Insurance.
Okay.
And when a person files for disability benefits, if they're approved, they're paid as if they are their full retirement age. And then if that person has minor children, then the minor children can be entitled to a benefit on their record. And again, a spouse, low income, no income, they also could be entitled on the record.
For a spouse to be entitled to Social Security of the other spouse, is there a certain period of time that the person, the Social Security earnings, how long did they have to work before the spouse gets the benefit?
Once that person is entitled, under disability, a person under 27 years of age, they need 3 years of work on the Social Security covered employment to meet what is called the insured status under disability. If the person's under 31 years of age, they have to have at least 12 quarters of coverage under that same period of time. 31 years of age or older, they must meet what is called the 2040 test, at least 5 years out of the 10 years prior to them becoming disabled.
Okay, now
so if they're covered, they meet that insured status, and their approved disability, their spouse could be entitled along with the family.
Okay, I'm going to switch gears now. Now I'm going to be a marriage counselor. How long does somebody have to be married to get Social Security from the other spouse's earnings after maybe the marriage dissolved?
Divorce, 10 years. 10 years requirement. So if a person want to receive divorce spousal or divorce widows or widower benefit, they must meet a 10-year duration of marriage.
And the good news is for the ex-spouse who's paying, he or she is not paying that benefit. It doesn't reduce their Social Security be one bit to pay the ex-spouse. And you can pay more than one ex-spouse if you had two that marriages that lasted
or,
10 years
or
each.
Or more.
Or more than that.
Each spouse.
If you've lived a full life, I guess you could. But you could.
Moving right along.
But divorced spouses, 10 years duration. Or divorced widow or widower. So they have to be at least 60 years of age to divorce widow or widowers.
The point I was kind of getting there is the one that...
If somebody just drops dead, say you get married and you're married for a year long and the person dies,
mm-hmm.
you can meet the eligibility requirement. Yeah.
Okay, but one would never know if we continue living that the ex-spouse has applied for and is receiving the benefit. In other words, they don't go back to the earner and say, you're going to get less because we have to give
some. No,
that's absolutely correct.
Yeah, right. That's what I thought. I just wanted to make sure everybody understood.
Yeah.
So say you go home tonight, fall asleep, you get a phone call and recognize it's your divorced spouse. And they're asking you for your Social Security number. We say, go ahead and give it to them because if you don't, we will. And we're just going to check out. When I say we, talking about Social Security Administration, just going to check to see if that divorced spouse could be eligible for benefits on your record. And like John indicated, it won't affect you, nor will it affect your current spouse.
Okay, we're coming down. We got 5 minutes. We covered a lot of ground and I think a lot of good information for people at whatever stage it might be. How about the planning piece? So let's talk about somebody late mid-career and the like. What do they need to know with regards to what they're going to get? Do they get something from Social Security saying that if
you
continue on?
Social Security used to send out that statement. It's called a statement.
Uh-huh.
Once a year. Send out 170 million statements 3 months before a person's birthday. But in order to do that, it costs $70 million. So now the Social Security has gotten information from the three credit bureaus, information from Internal Revenue Service, and information that it has on its own, so that it has developed security questions. So once a person goes online and answers these security questions in order to set up their Social Security account, and what they can do is get that statement online free.
Yeah, it tells you what you'll get, at least the paper one did. I've never looked at the one online, but it tells you what you'd be entitled to at 62. Now, that's an estimate, of course, because they have to project earnings. And one at your full retirement age. And did they do age 70?
Age 70, yeah.
I think it's quite useful.
See, this is going to be a breakout showing your earnings. That statement that John used to receive it in the mail, that's the one I'm talking about. But the one you go online is going to look identical to that.
Yeah.
And it's a financial tool to use so that you can do what-if scenario situation. What if I work longer? Because Social Security has online calculators where you can calculate. If I work longer, if I earn this amount, how about this scenario? You can do different scenarios.
People don't know this, though, right? And, I mean, this is benefit planning with a close second financial planning. People don't know the options with regards to Social Security, and I guess not everybody's married, but if they were, which spouse claims it first? And that's a whole show, I suppose.
This is how I say, click on it, stick on it, stroll through it, a lot of information at www.socialsecurity.gov. You can do. If you have a question, there's a little subject box up there where you can type in what your question is, and click on that, and the answer will come up.
Or call Lester.
1-800-772.
What's our number again?
And the number is 1-800-772-1213.
And Lester will pick up.
He should, but he's pulled back his 80-hour weeks, and he graces us now with his presence. All righty, we have 2 minutes, 3 minutes? 2 minutes. What was what surprise maybe somebody made that had they listened to this show or they knew it, they could have caught, but it's too late?
A lot of times folks don't realize when they can first be eligible and what they can be entitled to. So then they feel like, can Social Security go back and pay me the money that I missed out on? And the answer is no. The applications now are effective with the month of filing in most situations.
I would think that whatever the age is, they ought to have an idea, because you can get this online, and so you know, and helps you do planning. Or if there's something missing from it. Remember, I worked for the post office one Christmas time many, many years ago, and it wasn't on the list. And so I got it put back on. I don't know that it made a lot of difference, but it made a difference.
Yeah, and another thing, Social Security began August the 1st, 1935. This program is over 85 years of age. Over 85. So it's one of the longest social serving programs in the history of this nation.
And
so it's not going anywhere.
And it's gone but a changes long, will long be made. Way to eliminate poverty among the elderly.
That's correct.
And it's doing a fine job. And we got some more email questions, but they're too hard to ask with less than 1 minute left to go. So as we go into the 1 minute, I guess it's about 45 seconds now, just final quick comments.
Yeah, I would tell the American public to click on it, stick on it, stroll through it at www.socialsecurity.gov, www.socialsecurity.gov. And if you feel that you must speak to someone, call 1-800-772-1213.
Okay, John?
Well, if you're approaching retirement, or even if you're far away from retirement, try and take a retirement seminar from NITP.
Thank you, John. What a way to end the show. Thanks for listening, folks, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WEPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.